disasters and emergencies happen to good people like you every day. The frequency of these events are increasing at an astonishing rate. Now is the time to take responsibility for preparing and empowering yourself for the inevitable. Welcome to the Survive University Podcast, where we provide an education in preparation, giving you the tools to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. Now, let's get on with today's lesson.
Listen up, my preps. Welcome to another episode of the Survive University Podcast, where we discuss research-based solutions focused on preparation for protecting your life and your health during an emergency or a disaster. Our topics cover all things survival as we discuss with industry professionals on how to help you triumph over the toughest times in your life. I'm your host, Hakeem Isler, with co-host Maine, the OG, aka the Ordinary Guy. On today's episode, we talk about some aspects of my old profession, psychological warfare. As a psychological operations sergeant in the United States Army, I learned and saw firsthand how populations can be swayed and manipulated into operating in certain ways that were of benefit to the architects of clever propaganda strategies. In today's world, we see this often. These strategies are at work every day in our American society. Today, we will be talking about biases and how those biases can help influence and inform our decisions and how they can be swayed based on strategy and propaganda. Now turn on your ears and put on your thinking cap. Class is in session.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Hey, man, I am doing good. Just really excited about today's episode where we're going to be talking about 8 different biases, mm-hmm. And how those biases can influence, and inform people's decision-making process, and how that comes from my old profession.
Cool. So when we say biases, we're not speaking of, because usually when you say bias, people have a blanket definition of it, and they think it's okay. That's just thinking of one thing in a particular way because you favor that way of thinking, but you're saying that there's a science behind this.
Yeah, there's a science behind it. Since the dawn of man, we have had all types of different biases that mm-hmm. help us move and survive throughout our landscape. We had to have a bias against certain foods, right? Certain things can kill me, certain things won't kill me. We had to have a bias against certain areas. If I go to this area, this is where a lot of the giant Tyrannosaurus Rex roam around and they can kill me. So we started to form those understandings and they help us. But also, because we are clever as human beings, savvy human beings have mapped out how those processes work in our mind. And they can use that information to create situations artificially that take advantage of people who think in that way or take advantage of those biases. And so, it's a pretty deep, topic mm-hmm. and something that everyone should know. We all have biases, even me, even knowing the knowledge that I have. And we all are susceptible. But, hopefully this podcast will give us some understanding and some ideas so that we could be more aware of those biases and how to use those to our advantage.
Okay, so you're saying that there is, from the example you gave before, there's both good and bad biases.
Yes.
Okay, and you're saying, would you say there's also conscious and unconscious biases too?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Break it down. I'm ready. I got my notepad out. Tell me about some of these biases.
We have our reticular activating system, right? And this kind of is a portion of our mind that allows us to kind of filter out certain information so that we can more specifically look at what is important to our livelihood in keeping us alive, right? If you think about it, and everyone knows this on some level, we have millions of bits of information coming into our minds at any given time. Things you don't even know that you're paying attention or that's going in there is going in there. Smells and sights and sounds and all that stuff is being picked up. And if we had to stop and think about each and every one, each and every smell, each and every sound, then we would end up finding ourselves inundated and overwhelmed and not being able to communicate, not being able to do anything throughout our day and throughout our life. So the reticular activating system kind of helps us filter that out. And it says, this is what's important for you right now, and this is what's not important for you right now. And it tries to make those choices for you subconsciously. But as we all had those moments where we've missed things that were important, we got distracted by something that was not very important, and then we lost focus on what was important, it can sometimes fail us, right? And so this is kind of the gateway. This understanding is kind of the gateway of how our biases can work against us and not just for us.
So this part of the brain that you spoke of, it picks up all the information, and it actually does the deciding on what is important and what is not important in a particular time.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's really to help guide you through, you know, your life. So if you're like looking for food, but all of a sudden your ears intake information that says, oh, this bush is shaking in a certain way, which is from memory, how lions move. Mm-hmm. That's really more important than me looking for food right now. Mm-hmm. And if I don't make Hakeem aware, or if I don't make Maine aware, then we're going to die, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's trying to keep up with all of that. You know, like I said, millions of bits of information are going into your brain at any given time, going, you know, and it has to filter out like, oh, you know, that's just the smell of daisies. That's not important right now. Maine's trying to find food. That's just that's just the little bird flying in the sky. That's not important right now. We're trying to get water, you know. So it's helping us navigate in that way.
Hopefully we're not in a situation where we're near bushes where lions roam, but in modern times, are we finding that portion of the brain is inundated with information, like too much information, and sometimes picking up on the wrong signals? Or is it clever enough to filter and say, okay, this is what's still important and this is what's not important?
I think that's a great question. I think one of the things that we have to be very aware of and consciously aware of, if we can, is that like this whole podcast episode is about, is that there are people who tapped into that. Mm-hmm. So Facebook and Googles and things of that nature have all of these algorithms and tools that are now exploiting that aspect of our minds.
Yeah.
You know, and so people are clicking on things that they didn't realize that was even important to them, you know. And it's not because it's really important to them, it's because somehow that's become important to them because of the way the algorithm is working and tracking how they make decisions, right? What are their likes? What are their dislikes? What are the things that are kind of important? What are the things that they spent a little bit more time on to see what that was, and then really skewing and taking advantage of that portion of our minds?
It's interesting you say that, because I've been watching information and learning more information about social media, and do that partly as a profession. And what I've observed is in some of the studies where you speak to people who help create some of these platforms, they've put tools in place that they themselves cannot escape. The information and the algorithms are so well built that even the people who created them are susceptible to the effects of them. They can't filter out them, so they can't say, oh, that's something I built. It's like they find themselves falling into that same rut. That's why I'm looking forward to what we're going to discuss today, because any tools that we have that can help us filter through this or sharpen our skills in such a way where we can cut through a lot of the noise. And I don't want to just say social media noise. I mean media noise, interpersonal noise, relationship noise across the board, and understand what's really important is going to be really good. So let's jump in.
Okay, excellent. So out of the eight, we're going to start with two of the most important, right? Mm-hmm. And they are explicit and implicit biases, right? So just starting with that first one, and really let's dive into that a little bit and let's unpack it a little bit. Mm-hmm. This explicit bias, this refers to attitudes and beliefs, you know, both positive and negative, that we consciously or deliberately hold and express about a person or a group, right? So we feel like, you know, all gangbangers are stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how I really feel, but I'm just saying, I'm just saying as an example. But, you know, when you watch these movies on Netflix that dive into like how they created, you know, different processes for creating crack cocaine and how they created different processes for distributing drugs throughout their community and how they kept whole organizations in line and millions of dollars were being filtered through these, you know, through an area where, you know, the actual education level was in math was zero, but yet they're handling millions of dollars and being able to make things happen. So where did that bias come from? Where did that belief that this group was not smart? Actually, it was just the opposite. So sometimes we have these beliefs in our mind, certain color of skin is a certain way, or a certain area is supposed to talk or believe certain things, or, you know, and we start thinking of people and things in these ways consciously, and we know that it's there, and we know that that's how we believe, but we think we're right, you know, and that's an explicit bias. And obviously that can work against us, because we can think the wrong way about someone, and then that can put us in a space where we miss an opportunity. It could put us in a space where we, you know, we end up hurting someone and turning them against people, you know. I mean, there's so many different levels to why that could go wrong.
You can underestimate somebody.
You can underestimate somebody who you, you know, who could be of great value to your life, or maybe even not great value to your life, but just underestimate them and in some way inadvertently hurt their life, you know? So there's that aspect. Now, obviously that could also work for you. Or again, it's not positive nor negative, you know? So I could say that gangbangers are dangerous. What I know about gangbanging is that probably carry a weapon, probably is not as, you know, as appreciative of human life as, let's say, like a Buddhist monk, you know?
Very territorial.
Yeah, very territorial. And therefore, that can keep me out of harm's way, because I decide that wherever I know there's gang activity, I'm not going to go there, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
So, you know, that can work for me in a positive, you know? So there are those things, you know? But if I'm a teacher at a school, and I have some gang members in my classroom because I feel that they're not smart and they don't want to really be there. They're just there, and you know, and they're really going to choose the gang life. That can cause me to think down on that person, look down on that person, and put them in a situation where maybe they do want help, but I'm not willing to give it because my explicit bias is telling me that they don't want help. They don't need help. They're already sold on just being a gangbanger for the rest of their life. And that can obviously hurt them, like we just said, you know? So those would be examples of how that would go down, you know? And we can take that and layer it on anything. Relationships, you know, relationships between two male friends, two female friends, relationships between a male and a female who want to get intimate with each other, you know? I'm thinking a certain way, oh, all women are like this because the last three women I met were like that, you know? And so now I put everybody in that category, and that's not the truth. But, and I know, I may know that I hold that belief, but that doesn't mean that that belief is true.
Good stuff. I'm ready. And we're only on the first one, folks.
Hope
you're taking notes. Hope you're taking notes. So let's break down implicit bias.
So implicit bias is similar to explicit bias, right? The difference is that I don't know that I have this belief, right? It's subconscious. It's not a conscious thing where I look at this person and I consciously say, I believe this about them. This is more subconscious. This is something that I believe based off probably conditioning that happened from when I was a child, right? Mom told me or dad told me this is what this area is like, this is what this study is like, this is what these people are like, you know? And I've kind of grown up in that environment believing that. And so now it's just something that I do. You know, I walk by a certain person and I kind of feel like, they might attack me, or, even though they're not doing anything, they're just talking on a cell phone. But in my brain, I'm acting on that subconsciously, not understanding why that's happening. And so that's a very dangerous one, because I, you know, because whereas my explicit bias, I can have direct control over that. I can have a conversation with you as a gangbanger or something like that and say, whoa, this person is smart. I was thinking, consciously thinking, that all of these kids were not smart. And so now I can make a change because I'm actively aware that that's how I think about this, that scenario or that person or that group or whatever. In my implicit bias, I look at this person and I say, huh, this person is smart. But I'm not actively aware of that. I believe that they're all ignorant. So then I just kind of cover it up. In some cases, you'll find that people will cover it up by putting on a different label on it. Oh, that kid is outside of the norm, you know?
Got you.
And that may not even be a conscious thought. It's just like, Hakeem is different than everybody else. And he's the only one. And I'm not thinking consciously about that. That's just happening in my mind. That process is happening in my mind. And that's a very dangerous thing. You know, we can even say that on multiple levels, but one that's probably the more common that we can talk about that might be a little controversial, but hey, let's go for it. It would be like racism, you know? People want to believe that, oh, I don't think of that, or I don't think this about this group or this person, but you hear people throw those things all around all the time. You know, oh, white people are this way, or Jewish people are that way, or black people are this way, and, you know, and, or say things that they're not even aware that are, you know, harmful to another culture, you know, so, oh, man, you know, you don't know how to dance, you're black. It's like... okay. And then not think anything of it. Like, and then maybe offend that person. And then it's like, what'd I say? I just said, you know, I thought it was a good thing, you know, or the vice versa. And man, you know, I don't want that white guy on my team. He can't jump, you know? Yeah. And it's like, have you ever seen him jump? Do you know, have you played basketball with him before? Oh no, I haven't. So then you have the subconscious belief because you saw a movie a long time ago, or you know you heard from somebody somewhere in there that was the case, and that's not the case, you know, but it's a subconscious belief that I hold. And so really understanding that and how it informs your decisions, right? And when you're having a discussion with someone, how you may be operating from either an explicit bias or an implicit bias.
That is a very slippery slope. To your point, it seems like this situation is the one that falls into where people say they're different.
Yeah.
They may know 50 people that are of a certain persuasion that's different, but it's like, you guys are different. The rest of them are, you know, something, you know, the rest of them like eating peanut butter, but you guys like jelly, whatever the case may be. So that alone, and we're just on point number two, is mind-boggling to recognize that some of this stuff happens not only from a group of people who are or amongst, you know, not diverse. I mean, or, you know, not diverse, and they're around exclusively one group of people, but even the other individuals, when you're around a diverse group, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you can slip and have those kind of thoughts also, those biases also.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And, you know, and that's like you said, that is the slippery slope that makes conversations difficult when you start saying, and this is a really good point for where we are in the world right now. And I've had this conversation and I see these biases operating in people. And and I see how they can't break free. So it's always a very difficult conversation because of, and just to kind of put it out there and not be dancing around, but you have situations where a person will say, this is how I feel about X, Y, and Z. And, you know, these people are doing this and these people are doing that. And you're like, well, have you ever had a conversation with that group before? Oh, no, because that's a perfect example would be liberals versus, you know, conservatives, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, man, all liberals, da, 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 this, that, and the other. And okay, great. Well, how many liberals have you talked to? Well, I've talked to a lot. Well, what's a lot? I don't know, a lot. All of them, you know, like I doubt
all
you've talked to all of the liberals out there, you know.
Yeah.
And here I am. So a perfect example is in shooting, right? Shooting. It's a common belief that, you know, if you're of a liberal, more liberal mindset, you're anti-gun, you don't want guns, so on and so forth. I shoot all the time. I go to shooting ranges. I've met people who are liberals and they are like, I'm going to defend what's mine. I have a gun. I'm going to keep a gun, mm-hmm. you know, so on and so forth. And then I'll go and I'll turn around. I'll go to like a prepper event or something. I'll talk to somebody and they'd be like, all those liberals, they hate guns. Da, da, da. I'm like, man, I just shot one the other day.
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, they're different.
Yeah.
They're not like the other ones. And then you start seeing all those things. And I mean, you could just take that argument and you can place it on top of so many different scenarios and you'll start seeing how these things show up and they rear their head. And it's hard for people to break through. It's hard to go to somebody and say, could you maybe research that a little bit deeper and see if there's others out there that don't fit your belief system, you know, doesn't fit this explicit or this implicit bias that you keep speaking from. And if that's the case, if you find that, could you truly open-mindedly change your mind about that and hold on to that difference of opinion?
Knowledge bombs. We tend to drop them a lot around here, and we appreciate your feedback and support for the information, interviews, and perspectives shared. Become a Patreon supporter for Survive University and get additional exclusive content not shared during the podcast. Patreon subscribers also get information on other Survive University products and projects before they're released to the public. So visit patreon.com/Survive University and join us as we continue on this journey to get ready, be ready, and stay ready like never before. Do you think that it's a matter of, I guess for lack of a better term, being lazy, not wanting to investigate whether there may be a opposing opinion that counters not your opinion, but the bias that you may have? It's almost like the in a certain way, the mind gets trained into following the path of least resistance. So if you're inundated with a certain type of bias and message saying, hey, this is how it is, this is how it is, this is how it is, your mind does not want to investigate to say, okay, is it really like this? Or it just assumes that whatever has been told repeatedly, that that's fact.
And that goes into the reticular activating system.
Oh, okay.
Right. The reticular activating system is designed to help you make quick decisions mm-hmm. so that you don't have to think deeply about everything.
Okay.
And the way that becomes an issue is because it can make you lazy. Everyone says the world is flat. Why question it? Why do that? It could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. I could sail off of the planet. You know, it's flat. Everyone knows it. Everyone says it. And so the brain, the reticular activating system, takes it as fact. It becomes a part of our makeup. And then we don't want to challenge it. Because it's dangerous, you know, and we got other things to do. We got to find food and we got to like get water and we got to sleep and we got to provide for our family. So why do I want to think and waste time on something like that? So the reticular activating system or RAS is also like, you know, ow, I burnt my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Hot, stay away. Or my mom told me that would hurt me if I touch it. So I stay away. You get what I'm saying?
I got what you're saying.
And then that becomes built into, that becomes an explicit or implicit bias, right?
Gotcha.
So in so many words, I mean, it could be a little bit deeper than that, but that kind of gives you the idea of how those three kind of meld together and they start forming little human beings running around doing stuff, you know?
Got you. So, but it seems like you can't have it both ways. It seems like there is a place where that system, that mental system, has to assume things are a certain way because you can't explore that same situation every time. If that's indeed the case, then that's the person putting their hand on their stove constantly saying, "Ow, that was hot." The next day, "Ow, that was hot." Because, "Ow, that was hot." It's yep. still hot. "Ow, it's hot." It's like mentally, you'd have to break yourself down to a point, and correct me if I'm wrong, where you have to think about breathing. I got to breathe in. I got to breathe. You know, it's just, it doesn't become automatic.
So that leads us actually into the next bias.
Booyah.
But before we hit there, let's talk about that a little bit deeper. Let's unpack it and say, so you have this, like you said, that can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody wants to stand in front of a stove and keep touching it just to see if hot is still hot.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So that can be, so you have to pick and choose. Hot may not be as complicated as the human being. So if I'm making, you know, quick biased decisions based off human behavior, that might be a lot more, that's a lot more challenging than saying whether something's hot or cold or whether something's still hot. You get what I'm saying?
I got you.
So there's levels of complexity in which you have to make the choice. And again, if it's happening subconsciously, you have to say to yourself, am I okay with believing all these people are this way? Am I okay with believing every area in this area is this way? And deeply examine that and keep yourself open to change. And we do have that power, but because these biases and the reticular activating system is so strong as a mechanism to help us survive, we have to really work at it if that's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And so we have to choose what we want to work at. You know, I'm going to just take hot as hot. But if you think about it, somebody wants, just like we say hot is hot, I don't want to have to keep checking it. Somebody once thought that the world was flat. And many people never wanted to check that out. And could you imagine if nobody ever said, let's really investigate this? Every generation before me, thousands of people saying, you know, millions of people saying that the world was flat, you know, and just taking it for what it was. And it took one, two, or a group of people to actually say, maybe it's not. Let's go and investigate this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that changed everything for us as a human species, right? Understanding and knowing that knowledge gave us the opportunity to start exploring other things and grow in that particular way. And so that's where a lot of this stuff becomes complicated. But to go back to what I was saying about moving into the next bias is the normalcy bias, right? Mm-hmm. This idea that just because it was that way 1,000 times before, it will be that way 1,000 times after. And that's not always true.
No.
You know, just because no man has traveled to space before means that no man can travel to space ever. If we thought that way, we'd never have Elon Musk like shooting rockets up like every week. You know, people going to space like all the time, you know. And devices and satellites and everything else out there. So there has to be someone who's willing or a group who's willing to think deeply about it to break those molds, to break those biases, to move us to the next stage. Is a normalcy bias a good thing? Again, all of the biases have good and evil because it's a balance just like everything else,
yeah.
Right? Or dark and light, or bad and good, you know, whatever the case may be. So we have to really start thinking about these things deeply. And so the normalcy bias, just to like kind of make it clean and concise, is that it's the tendency for people to believe that things will always function the way that they normally have, right? And so I believe that this is, you know, I flick that switch on the wall, the light's always going to come on because I paid the light bill. And then one day a hurricane happens and you flip that switch, light doesn't come on, and I'm like, oh crap, what do we do? So you have to understand and be aware that things change, right?
So it seems like that one, and it is basically the best example for the mission of what we do here at Survive U. It counters that mission because it's the expectation that people feel that what is going on right now will always go on. What the good things that are happening right now, the normality that they have in their life will always be consistent. And while tragedy takes place throughout the world or in different places, it'll never happen to me because it never has before.
Hmm.
That's a big one.
I mean, it's, you're right on it.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked about explicit bias. We talked about implicit bias, normalcy bias, and I feel like I've gotten a good gist of bias overall. I mean, my mind is spinning right now with all the information you shared, because I feel like you've opened up Pandora's box. So to imagine that there's more is hard for me to believe. So what's next?
So what's next is confirmation bias. So we all, every human being wants to be right, right?
Wow.
We want to be right. We want to know that our choices are good choices. We want to know that people acknowledge our choices. And so confirmation bias is how we hide the truth from ourselves. The truth that people are different. The truth that people think differently. The truth that a person who's a certain way today, 10 years from now, might be a totally different way. Right? A thing that was one way 10 years ago is going to maybe a totally different way 10 years from now. Like when people, when they were children or when they were 10, they hated mustard. Mm-hmm. Now they're 30 and they love mustard. They put on everything. Mm-hmm. Well, what changed, you know? And if you knew that person when they were 10, didn't contact them anymore, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, let's get together and meet up at this restaurant. And then they sit down and they plop a burger in front of them and they put a bunch of mustard on it. You'd be like, what the heck is going on here? You know, our whole childhood, you hated mustard.
Yeah.
So the truth is that people change, things change, right? Things, you know, things can go against all of those, and that's what we've been working up to, right? We had this reticular activating system says, this is important, this is not important. We had the explicit bias where I'm going into this kind of concept of, you know, I have these beliefs about certain things because that's what I believe. And then we have our implicit bias, you know, where it's kind of subconscious. I'm not really sure why I believe this way, and I'm not really thinking about it. It's just happening. And then we have our normalcy bias. The way it is the way it's always going to be. And then we have our confirmation bias. So let's dive into that. Let me explain that just a little bit more deeply, because I just briefly touched on it.
You just blew my mind, by the way. I was, and wait, there's more. It's like, it keeps going, man.
I'm a salesman for the biases. I'm going to package it up and sell it to people.
I'll sell it to people, which is part of probably the bias also, the reinforcement of marketing, but go on.
Yeah, yeah. So the selective collection of evidence, right? The selective collection of evidence. So if I have this confirmation bias, I'm going to select specific evidence that supports my belief,
mm-hmm.
right? That supports the things. Oh, you know, and then the things that don't support that belief, I'm going to hide from those, or I'm going to block those out, or I'm going to choose not to see those. If I'm in explicit bias mode, I have a conscious belief, then I choose consciously to ignore that information. If it's an implicit bias and it's a subconscious belief, then subconsciously, my brain wants to protect itself, so it chooses to act like that doesn't exist, right? Almost like when people say fight, flight, or freeze, right? Mm-hmm. You have the fight where I choose to take action because I don't like what's going on here. I flight. What's going on here is a little bit deeper than where I want to go, so I'm running from it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave this thing. And then we have freeze. What's happening here is so mind-blowing. I'm not really sure what to do, what to say. It's breaking down my belief system and my structure, and I don't have an answer for it. So I freeze up, right?
Yeah.
And so that kind of idea plays into this. You know, in this particular confirmation bias, though, I'm looking at this and I'm looking for things to make me right. I'm saying the world is flat. The world's been flat my whole life. It kept me from traveling. It kept me from doing this because I thought I was going to fall off the planet. And now Maine comes and he starts saying, no, the earth is round. And then I'm like, well, if the earth is round, then that means I've been wrong my whole life. That means I didn't travel for nothing and all this other stuff. So now I start looking for other people. And then another smart person comes out of the woodwork and says, here's why the earth is flat, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to go with the guy who keeps my psyche from imploding on itself.
Got you.
You get what I'm saying? Because I don't want to have to think deeply about this. I don't want to have to deal with this truth. I want to just continue for things to be the way they are because they were the way that I was comfortable and they allowed my reticular activating system to focus on things that were important to my livelihood. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. So it sounds like with the first two, explicit and implicit bias, it is a fluidity that goes with it, but it's something that either you consciously or unconsciously move about a particular decision or thought process. But normalcy and confirmation seem to be locked and loaded. I am staying put and I want the world kind of to shift to my perspective or way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
With normalcy, it's almost where I don't want things to change. So when they change, I get into that freeze mode and it's like, whoa, you know, what's going on here? But confirmation is like, I don't want the world to change. So I am going to keep the way I'm thinking and look for things in my environment to confirm that it is the way I want it to be, the way I feel it should be.
Yeah.
Wow.
So confirmation bias, if you want to see that very clearly, if you want to see it in operation, look at politics.
Yeah.
You know, look at politics and how people treat their political party, how people treat their political candidate. A person will come out and do something really horrible. And then, somebody, let's say I know you and you know me. And you know that I'm a guy who's all about protection and health and treating people fairly and, you know, and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden my political candidate turns around and slaps a child, you know, mm-hmm. on national television. And then he turns around or she turns around and says, I'm sorry, you know, I had a moment, a lapse of judgment, you know, but I'm going to church and I'm doing the right thing now. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, you know, man, we all make mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, like he just made a mistake. You yes. know, like, look, that's what they said. And oh, look, this other person came on television and confirmed that, you know, this was just a lapse of judgment because they know that person too. So now I am finding confirmation so that I can maintain my implicit bias, right? And, you know, I'm able to hold on to what I know about that person, that situation, which also protects my psyche. You know, it allows me to be right. It allows me to be right in my beliefs on that person, on that topic. And so you can see that happening all across the board.
And that's regardless of what political affiliation you
exactly.
are. If you're conservative, you're a diehard conservative. If you're a liberal, you're a diehard liberal. And even to break it down even further, if you are a Cowboys fan, you're diehard Cowboys. Doesn't matter if they have, you know, somebody does something crazy on the field, you're still a diehard. And you look for those glimmers of hope to say, well, that happened because of this or the referees or whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. They didn't have enough support in the stands or, you know, it's always something to justify whatever happens.
That's the key word, justification. Hey guys, there is a lot of information in this podcast episode, as well as all of our other episodes. We distilled down some of the greatest lessons from all of our episodes that we share with you. You'll find that information on our Patreon account, where we would like to invite you to come over for $4 a month. You can join our Patreon account. You can help support us, keep us doing this good work, and then also learn some valuable skills. If you're looking to get more education, get into some courses, join us at our SurviveUniversity.com website. Again, that's SurviveUniversity.com, where you can gain the knowledge that you need to really grow your survival expertise. I'm trying to justify in my mind why this would be okay. Why this would be right. And so I've had conversations with people that I know are great people, but they start talking about politics or religion and so on and so forth, and then they start saying things that are just nightmarish.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, it doesn't matter who this person is or who that person is or what religious belief you have. If you do something that is wrong, it's wrong. You know, like, just say it. You know, just say it, you know, say it, say that you know, because when I talked to you the other day, you said killing a person under any circumstance was wrong. Mm-hmm. Now I'm talking to you and you're like, well, you know, because now it's done by some group or some people or whatever you believe in. Now all of a sudden it's okay.
Yes.
You know, and that's what, you know, we weren't on the air at the time, but you and I had this conversation that, truth and belief and these biases are relative.
Yeah.
You know, they change. The goalpost changes, the line changes, is very blurry.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we can live in a society where we have an anti-hero.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, you got little kids dressed up as Thanos for Halloween, you know, like, wait a minute, isn't that the bad guy that killed half of the population in the universe?
Yes.
And this little kid is like, I'm Thanos. I'm so cool. You know, like, give me some candy. Yeah. And somehow that dude's cool. Yeah. You know, like, he destroyed half of the population in the universe. So, you know, you have these, the way the story's written, the way people appeal to that story is there. And so this is why, you know, PSYOP or any of these psychological warfare tactics are so dangerous. In the civilian world, we don't even call it that. We call it a political strategist, or we call it a marketing, you know,
exactly.
Firm,
yeah.
You know? So there are all these different things. We talk about, how did dairy become one of the food groups?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then you start digging into it and you're like, oh, there was a PR firm that came in and a marketing firm and lobbied for this thing to become one of the staples of, you know, the American, you know, nutritional system. Mm-hmm. And now it's taught in school as, you know, something that's supposed to be super healthy for you.
True.
And now we have science that's coming out that's saying something just different, you know.
And that science is not being well received because you have that normalcy bias.
Mm-hmm.
That, wait a minute. Actually, no, you have both. You have the normalcy bias and you have the confirmation. I've been taking my notes. Confirmation bias, because it's like, wait a minute. The only reason my teeth are strong in my mouth is because I drink milk every day.
Mm-hmm.
Not to knock milk, but it's just talking about how a message can be repeated so often that you accept it as fact. And one of the things that I mentioned before we got on air is that you can ask enough questions of the truth that it becomes a lie.
Yeah.
And if someone knows and they want to persuade you of something, they have an arsenal. You've only gone halfway down the list, but we have an arsenal of information that you've already provided that they could use at their disposal to help persuade you to feel that we are in a situation where, you know, whatever is being told is fact. We look around and we see, okay, if this person to my right believes it and that person to my left believes it and the person in front of me believes it and the person behind me believes it, the person that's sitting across the room is probably wrong. And mm-hmm. That's not always the case. It's just a matter of they're looking at you because you're behind them or you're beside them or
yeah.
And collectively you've assumed that this is fact when it may not be the case.
Yeah. That's why, you know, in my ninja training, which the reason I went into PSYOP in the Army is because of my ninja training, we have a plan, or what we call the accomplishment plan. And one of the pieces of that is says, truth is relative. Try to see things from others' perspective without losing your own. Try to see things as they really are and stay tuned in. Mm-hmm. The idea is that, you know, your truth may not be my truth, but my truth may be relative to me and your truth is relative to you. We have two options. Either I'm just going to think you're just full of it and you're completely wrong and I don't want to hear anything you have to say. Or I'm going to say, well, maybe Maine has something to say that is contrary to what I believe, but maybe he's right. Or maybe he has, maybe that has some bearing in the way he was raised. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's not a bad guy. He just has certain conditioning that has led him to believe that. Either of those choices, or except for me just saying I hate you and driving on, the other choices are deep choices. They mean that we have to have a conversation. They mean that I have to stop, pause, and go a little deeper into this conversation and or into this thought. And for people who are trying to operate very quickly and make snap judgments so that we can continue on with our day, and if so that our reticular activating system can fulfill its duty, mm-hmm. we don't want to think about that, right?
Or
we,
I can go back to, you know, watching something on social media.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
get it over and done with.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't. You're right.
And so we get stuck in these cycles. Yeah. And that's really why if you get a savvy person who knows how to tap into that, they can do a lot of damage. They can, you know, sway a lot of opinions. And what you were talking about, where all of us are looking at the same thing, believing it, that goes into something that we'll get into the next time we get on this topic, which is the bandwagon effect, right? The bandwagon effect is one that we'll talk about in that part two of this. And, you know, and that's going to be very interesting for people, I'm sure.
Well, I can't wait for that conversation, but I do want to ask you something real quick before we go. You mentioned that part of your training prepared you to look outside. You said it was part of, what was the plan that you mentioned? It was a plan that you mentioned where you have to look at things from the other person's perspective or try to attempt to do so. Do you feel that having the ability to do that makes you stronger than having a confirmation bias where you're trying to confirm that everything you believe is true?
Yeah.
Or do you think that, is it just different or is it better?
So to be good at this, to be good at breaking free of these bonds, these chains of the biases, is very difficult. And here's why. Because if I'm trying to break free of them, I'm still operating under the assumption that there is a correct way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a correct belief.
Got you.
So Maine might not be a bad person. Maine might not be a bad person is a belief.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeking to confirm that.
Got you.
And when I confirm it, in whatever way I confirm it, either you turn out to be good or bad in my eyes, which would then fall into one of my biases, right?
Gotcha.
So it goes into some depth there. And so you got to look at that. And that's why, again, a lot of people don't want to do that. That's hard, man. And so you mean to tell me I'm going to go through all that work and I might get to a point where I realize that I have to do it again, right?
Yeah.
I have to do it again. That's why I tell people, you know, when I teach classes and stuff, I say one of the best tools that you can have is the scientific method, where you go through this process of, like, you know, questioning, forming a hypothesis, testing a hypothesis, and going through this process. And then you get to a point where you have a solution, and then you test it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to a point where you have a solution, and then you ask somebody else to test it, and then it becomes peer reviewed. And then you you go through a process like that. Now, the downside is that people can taint that process, put it out into the world now, because it's so easy to put it on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, somebody looking for a confirmation in their own belief picks it up and uses it as a part of their confirmation bias.
Wow. kind of like online reviews.
Yep, that's it.
And that now, you can actually pay for it.
Yeah, which is what people didn't realize until maybe a few years ago, is that the reason this gym on this island with a population of 100 has 20,000 reviews is because they paid some company in another country to like write those reviews for them.
Yeah.
Which skews, you know, people's perception. And nobody's thinking like, wait a minute, the island is only 1,000 people on that island, and that business has only been open for 2 years. How did they get 25,000 reviews? What's the, and oh, okay, well, let me look at what the travel logs are. So you figure in the 5 years that they've been open, only 6,000 people have actually traveled to that country or that island, you know, so that can't be true. But you would have to do that homework. It's a lot easier to just see the 25,000 five-star reviews and just say, oh, that must be a good gym. Let me go to it.
Makes perfect sense.
You know, so if we just take that and just blow it up, that's happening on a grand scale when it comes to cars, buying cars, when it comes to politics, when it comes to science, when it comes to food and nutrition. It's the same story, just a different board game.
So in a nutshell, I'm not going to say rid yourself, because I don't think it's possible based on what we've discussed to rid yourself of bias, but to become more aware of the bias that exists, it sounds like you need to take the time needed to separate yourself from what I would call noise of persuasion, you know, an opinion from different realms, and be able to analyze things from your own perspective and take the time needed to do so.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well, like I said, I can't wait till next time. I'm gonna keep my notebook open. Any parting words, sir?
No. Well, I lied. There are some parting words. I would like to invite people who are listening to this to take some time to step back from your everyday mindset and to review your opinions and your beliefs around things that you have very strong opinions and belief around. You know, I know that is a lot to ask, you know, because we're busy, which is part of the trap as well. But if you really want to be someone who helps our society, helps our environment, then it's going to take some work in how you think, you know, and to really try to think deeply about your choices and your beliefs. And maybe you might find that, you know, the beliefs that you held aren't ones that you hold because you actually consciously thought about. It's ones that you hold because somebody told you that when you were three, and that's what you've been holding on to. If you're a 30-year-old or a 20-year-old person operating on the decisions you made when you were 3 years old, may not be very successful for you. So that's what I like to leave people with. I can go more, but I think that's enough.